Hello, everyone. It is Thursday, November 18th. You may get this podcast sometime over the weekend. Just adjusting my volume here for a second. It is me, Sam Bierenbaum, Director of Sales of Auto Car Club here in Scottsdale, Arizona. I am flying solo today. Eli is busy with a few other things, so it will just be you and I today, which is plenty okay. I think we got this under control. Anyhow, I am very, very excited to announce our guest today. We will be joined shortly. He'll be calling in. His name is John Wilhoit. John Wilhoit is a 356 restoration wizard. I jokingly call him that. Well, I wouldn't say jokingly. I would more say affectionately call him that because he genuinely turns out 356s that are so immaculate and so perfect mechanically, aesthetically, and driving, as far as driving goes too. Excuse me, I'm a little bit speechless just thinking about his products, that it's really worth your time to listen to this episode and hear a true artisan speak about what he does and what he loves to do. I have had the pleasure of driving a few different Wilhoit restoration examples. These are cars that are in a restoration process that is similar or equivalent to what I would call a rebirth of the car. They end up coming out of his shop as new, and they are better than they ever were leaving the factory back in the 50s or 60s when they were new. Even, you know, it comes down to the door seams, the shut lines, the panels, the paint, the way the gearboxes feel. He has been developing his own 2.2-liter racing motor, which he's now putting into Porsche 912s, as well as, you know, as other 356s. Like a lot of these restoration shops, you can kind of have a John Wilhoit car that is fully restored, which can take years, or you can have one that's been serviced by him or tweaked. I really think he can do a variety of things depending on the customer and what they're looking to get out of it. I recently drove a 1958 Wilhoit Speedster, and now you always have to put Wilhoit in front of the name of the car because it's never just a 1958 Speedster anymore. It's now a 1958 Wilhoit Speedster. This thing is so dialed in, the suspension. It has disc brakes now. It has the stock engine on a crate and the 2.2 motor in it. It has a dogleg gearbox. I say I've been lucky enough over the years to drive really some fantastic automobiles, and this Speedster gives you the same essence as a Carrera GT or, let's say, a 964 RS, or even think of, you know, just the best cars where the driving experience is such a sum of their parts. That's really what this vehicle is. It's fast. It's refined. It's a 1958 car, and it feels so modern without feeling like it's a kit because it's all original, which is the greatest part about it. Anyway, we will get him on the line here soon. Stand by. Grab a coffee. Grab a tea, soda, cookie, whatever you need. Sit back, relax, and we're going to listen to two nerds talk about cars. So that's what we're here for, and get a little fuel for thought.
Hello.
Hey, John, this is Sam Bierenbaum.
How you doing?
So, how's it going? How's your day?
It's good, man. We're just running an engine on the dyno and testing out the exhaust system for Bursch.
Oh, cool. So that's that 2.2 motor?
Yeah, it's a 2.2, and they came up with a new exhaust system. Their regular header set up with a canister, and then they've got one that's really loud, but, you know, some people like that.
Sure.
And
sure.
It's just got two little sport mufflers that come out either way, and then it sort of exits out the exhaust cutouts in the body.
Sweet. And that motor will be applicable in a 356, a 912, whatever you really like?
Yeah, whatever you want. Yeah,
Cool.
we can any 356 or 912.
That would be awesome. And so we have that 58 Speedster here at Auto. One of our members owns it. Is
Right.
that engine different, the one in question, than what's in that car
No.
now?
No. It's the same engine.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I've
Yeah.
driven that car a little bit, and that engine is so damn good, man. It is smooth. It has torque. It has power.
Yeah.
It really, it's pretty crazy. I mean, it's as fast as any six-cylinder, older 911 motor as well.
Well, in a speedster, you're talking about a like 1,700 pound car compared to a 911, which is about a 2,300 pound car. So, it's a lot lighter in a speedster, and that one with a five speed. I mean, it, and that's got a stock exhaust on it
Yeah.
too.
Yeah. It's a
So,
very tasteful
you
car.
give away a little bit with a stock exhaust. Not as bad as you'd think.
Such a cool car, man. I love that one. And looks like on Instagram, everyone probably knows him because they probably listened to his podcast, but Paul Zuckerman took delivery of his car recently as well. And does that have
Yeah.
that engine?
No, he has an engine that we do for the A models. And it's an 1858 cc. What we do is we offset grind a late crank to 80 millimeters, and we use the 86 millimeter pistons and cylinders, so there's no machine work to the case at all.
Oh, cool.
And we use Carrillo rods and different pistons and a different camshaft. And those engines are really fun, and you can do it on an early motor. And you don't have to do any kind of case machine work or anything.
Sweet, sweet. So, when did this all start for you? When did you get bit by the Porsche bug, the 356 bug? Were you always working with cars as a kid? Were you
You
racing? What
know,
what's the story?
well, I mean, I've told this story a few times before, but
All right. I was going
my,
Wikipedia.
yeah, it was kind of a, once the first time I ever rode in a Porsche, it was a guy that was the manager out at the golf course where my parents were members, and he had a 57 coupe. And at the time I had a 59 Alfa Spider, and he always wanted to drive the Alfa Spider and wanted me to, I'm 16. And he said, "Can I drive your Alfa?" And I said, "Well, let me drive your Porsche." And he said, "Oh, sure, I'll let you drive it." And so I let him drive the Alfa, and he was sliding around corners and everything. And we got back to
Jeez.
the golf course. I thought, "Oh man, I'm going to get to drive that Porsche." And he said, "Are you nuts? I wouldn't let you drive
Oh,
that
so
car."
he freaking gypped you.
He gypped me, but he gave me a ride in it, and I was hooked, man. I just the sound with the engine in the back and everything. I was hooked. So took me a couple of years until I could get one, but I finally found my first Porsche was a 1960 Cabriolet, a Super 90.
Wow.
And believe it or not, I paid $950 for it.
Oh my
That was
God.
back in 1971.
Holy
And
crap.
I painted it in the driveway at my folks' house, and had the upholstery redone by a guy, just a local guy in the neighborhood that was an upholstery guy. It probably looked terrible, but at the time I thought it was great.
Yeah, that was your baby.
I had a lot of fun with that car, yeah.
Cool.
And from then on, I went to SC for 4 years and got a business degree. And when I got out, I didn't want to wear a tie or get my hair cut, so I started. Kind of in my last year of college in the summer, I bought a car from a guy in the neighborhood who he I was trying to buy the car so I could fix it up, and I came one day and somebody had come around the corner and sideswiped him.
Oi.
So I then he was finally willing to take my price, And so I bought the car from him. I went over to Ozzie Brothers, bought a fender, and the guy next door to a little garage that I had at a building that my grandfather owned, it was a welder, and he came over and helped me weld the fender on. And And I flipped that car and I made, good money. I don't remember exactly how much I made, but it was more than anybody that I knew was making at the time.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Being a bartender or waiting tables. So I was in business, man. So when I got out of college, I just started doing that.
Sweet.
And and the rest is history.
Very cool. So, were your parents ticked off when you started painting that car in their driveway?
My dad, my dad, that was his deal. I mean, he liked to buy and sell cars and flip cars, and my mom couldn't really say much.
Sure,
She
sure.
wanted me to be a doctor or a lawyer, but no, that's, I didn't have that in my plan.
That's hilarious. Well, seems like it worked out for you because now you have, I always tell people, the best 356 shop in North America. I mean, I don't really know who
Well, hey,
competes
I'm
because,
flattered that
I mean, I see a few of your cars that have come through auto. Whether they're member owned or, sometimes we'll ship them through here and they've just been, man, they're fantastic. They're immaculate. I'm always impressed by the way
Well, I
the
mean,
doors close.
we put a lot of work into that. My shop manager, Chris Mayring, he does all the painting and kind of the final body adjustments at this point. And I mean, I started out doing everything, and gradually I'm just the guy now that talks to everybody and tries to get people to spend money on cars.
Yeah, yeah.
I end up doing some stuff whenever there's a problem, but yeah, Chris really does a lot. I mean, he's indispensable at the shop, and I've only got nine guys here, so we're a small operation.
Oh wow. All right. What's your
But
favorite part about a restoration, and what is the biggest pain in the ass part about the restoration process?
the favorite part is when the car's done and everything works great and everything turned out really good. The hardest part of the restoration, it really, for any restoration, is the body and the paint. Everything else you can almost kind of do yourself. I mean, getting the engine done right. I mean, we ended up redoing a lot of stuff that people do, but the body and paint's where you can really make a mistake, because if you don't have the body work done right and then the paint's not done right, it's really difficult to wind that back and redo it. I mean, we've had cars where they came in and somebody said, "Oh, I paid, $30,000 to have the metal work done by my guys. He's a master metal guy." And whenever they tell me they paid $30,000, and I think, "Oh man,
Jeez.
it's not going to be good,"
No.
because most of these cars need so much metal work. A car that is almost perfect still needs $50,000 worth of metal work
Sure.
to remove all the old lead and redo it and fix a lot of the issues that the cars had originally, and then straighten the metal out. And if stuff's been replaced, it just, I mean, it's a lot of work, and you got to really be picky about it. And then when you paint the cars, everything has got to be perfectly clean. So you gotta blast and clean and go over the car with a microscope to make sure there's no pinholes or any little weird places, and a lot of that gets covered up, by guys that are not either qualified or just don't have the experience,
Right.
or they're used to just blowing stuff out, And so, you kind of get what you pay for most of the time, but yeah, it's worth spending the money. But a lot of guys can't afford, to do that, and
Sure.
so they do the best they can, and I understand that. You're not going to spend, $400,000 restoring a coupe that often, unless it's something special. And it can certainly cost that much to do a speedster, roadster, or any of the other cars.
Yeah, I mean, it's from what I've seen, it's kind of worth it because you're getting the best of the best. And Eli always says this, and I'm not sure if it's an original quote or maybe he attributed someone else, but you might as well only cry once. So just like restorations, just like buying cars,
yeah,
you may as well buy a good example so you don't have to deal with all the work that you're inevitably going to have to pay for. And then for restorations, yeah, you may as well have a good restoration done.
Well, it's like, I think it's like rebuild a house or a boat or anything else. If you do the work right, it's, you don't, I mean, I've had customers complain about price. I mean, that's a, you know, that's not an uncommon thing, but they don't usually keep complaining year after year, you know,
mm-hmm.
But if something wasn't done right, and every time you look at the car, you're like, ah, oh, geez, I should have done that right. You know, and we've had cars that came in and they were restored by someone else, and we just have to sort of, some things you just have to let them go, and other right. things I tell the customer, we got to fix this, you know.
All right. Yeah. What are you driving these days? What's in your stable? What do you go out and have fun with on weekends or daily or whatnot?
You know, I mean, my daily driver is a Chevy Tahoe.
Hey, that's
I'm
great.
Always carrying stuff around, but I have a 66 912 and I have a 71 911.
Cool.
They're both kind of hot rods, and they're my fun cars to drive, but I have a whole bunch of Porsches, but they're not all like cars that are sitting there waiting for me to drive them. I have a bunch of cars that are in various processes of restoration,
right,
that sort of thing.
Awesome.
But some of these guys like to list all their cars. I get it.
Yeah.
I have a nice collection of cars that I really like.
That's
know?
Great. I have some cars. Leave me alone.
Yes. I don't, you know, I mean, every car I have means something to me and has a story, and that's cool.
That's the
you
best.
Know, that's kind of the neat thing. I mean, not that that's an imperative thing, but it's fun when you have a car that's got a certain story. Or, you know, I have a 65 SC that I bought from a buddy of mine. He bought the car new and ordered it with a bunch of special options.
Oh, cool.
And it just, you know, he passed away a few years ago, but
sorry.
So I have that car, and it's a neat car. It's got a lot of history, you know, for me. And so that's important.
Yeah, of course. What kind of special options does it have if you want to get into it?
This,
I'm sure our listeners,
you know,
would like to hear.
This was a 65 SC coupe. And when he bought it, he ordered it. His name was Bob Roucher. He was the old guy in the 356 club and registry when it started out. And he'd been around forever. And he bought a 65 SC 356
mm-hmm.
and a 65 911 and picked them up at the same time.
That's pretty cool. That's awesome.
I know. And this car, he ordered it with no side decos, no hood handle and no bumper guards, and he had the factory fill in the exhaust cutouts in the rear.
Huh.
He said because he was going to put a Bursch exhaust on it.
Huh.
And so that's the way he had him do it. And, but I added a whole bunch of, and it has a factory electric sunroof. It was originally silver, which was a special order, but I added, it's got every option you can get.
Wow. That's really cool. And
it was one of those cars where I saved a whole bunch of trick stuff, you know, for years and years. And this was the car I put it all on.
Sweet. That's cool that he ordered the 65 SC, and then he also got a 65 911 kind of at the bookends of the end of the 356,
you know, yeah,
and the beginning of the 911.
I don't know that he realized even the significance of it. The funny thing was he ordered both the cars with sunroofs,
huh.
And he said when he got to the factory to pick it up, the car, the 911, didn't have a sunroof.
Oh, so they
said,
kind of forgot.
That? You know, They said, well, we're not doing sunroofs. Well, Troy Porsche always had his own spot, you know, at the factory,
Sure.
like his parking place. And he said, well, the car over in Dr. Porsche's spot, it's an early 911. It has a sunroof. And they said, yeah, we did that one for
Special.
Dr. Porsche, and it made so much wind noise that he said, we can't do another sunroof until we figure out the wind noise problem.
Oh, that's fantastic that he actually
Yeah,
tested
and
it out
so
on his
I guess,
own.
yeah, so I guess that's when they came up with that little flap, you know, that pops
Yes,
up on the
the metal.
sunroofs and stuff. But anyway, but he had ended up selling that car, but he always kept the 356.
Cool. One of our members, he just got into a one owner since 1977 59 coupe sunroof.
Yeah, wow.
Pretty nice car. You know, it's a little rough around the edges, but you know,
Yeah.
it's not a fully restored car. The engine's strong and it runs really well. He may do a few things to it down the, you know, down the road, down the line, but it's his first Porsche. So he's starting with a
Oh,
very
that's
special
great.
car.
Yeah. Yeah,
I'm
he's gonna
happy
be
for him.
spoiled. Yeah.
It's a really cool car. It's like white on, I think it was factory white on black. It was the reupholstered in the 80s, so it has red, you know, seats and dash now, but it's cool,
Yeah.
man. He loves it.
Yeah, there's something kind of neat about a car that has a little bit of patina.
Agreed.
My 71 911 is like that, and my 66 912. They both are very original cars. Although my 71 911 was, you know, was my $400 Porsche. I
Wow.
pulled it out of the backyard of a guy that lived next to my sister and had to redo everything on the car, but it's still got the original paint on it.
Holy
But it's
crap.
got a lot
What
of
color is
patina,
it?
but it's pastel blue.
Nice.
Yeah, I did a video with Petrolicious on it.
Oh, cool. Everyone check
You've
that
ever
out
seen that?
on I guess it's on YouTube
Yeah.
or their website.
It's on, yeah, Petrolicious. You can
All right,
see
well,
it.
they need to pay me for that advertising, so
Yeah, there
joking.
you go. There you go. What's
the most, you know, gratifying part of your job? What would you say?
Well, I'll tell you something. I have a whole bunch of friends that started out as customers. And, you know, they mean a lot more to me than any of the cars do.
Sure.
And it's really funny. I do a German trip every couple of years, although it's been on hold for a couple of years now. But I go over to Germany with my wife's German. And
Oh,
so
cool.
I know myself around over there pretty well. And I take about 18 or 20 of my friends, and we go over to Germany. We go to the Techno Classica trade show. We
Nice.
usually go to a track like Nürburgring or Hockenheimring, and we do like a taxi ride or rental car day. And then we go down to Porsche and get a couple of tours down there. And I have a bunch of friends over in Germany that have shops that restore cars, and we kind of go from one shop to the next, checking out all the cars and stuff. And the fun thing is that, you know, they're all people that either were customers or I knew, you know, through the club. And it's funny, one of the guys said one time, we're all sitting around over there, you know, drinking beer and eating German food, and he says, man, think about it. We all know each other because of these little cars,
Yep.
you know, and it was kind of amazing, you know. I mean, not that I don't love my friends that aren't into cars, but there's just something about, you know, the you know everybody because of the cars, you
It's a
know,
nice
that's kind
common
of a new
bond.
thing. Yeah, I mean, that's neat. I mean, I love the cars, you know, but I'm not really the kind of guy that wants to sit at home and work on my car by myself, you know.
Sure.
It's
What are some top-notch 356 or air-cooled 911 shops in Germany that you like?
well, that you know, we always go to Roof.
Yeah, of course. I mean, they're the
He's
best.
about as top notch as you get.
Yeah, you
And
can't beat
then
that.
another good friend of mine is Peter Hoffman. He has a company called Classic Parts in Saarbrücken. He has a big four cam collection. And then another friend of mine is Johan Botter. He used to run the Porsche Classic Center over there in Germany. And he has a neat collection of early cars. Ooh. And God, there's another friend of mine, Johan Stengler. He has a really cool collection of tractors.
Oh, cool. Porsche tractors?
And then another guy I know, Andy Foteller, he's down in Balingen, which is below Stuttgart, and he stores cars for people, and then he restores them, and he always says he's never sold a car. He's got all the cars he's ever owned, you know?
Oh, wow.
And we go down there, and he spends like 2 hours taking us through and showing us all of his cars. And you know, we usually were going back every couple of years, and some of the guys, they want to go back 2 years later. You know, I always try to mix it up and do something different. And there's other guys too. A friend of mine in Wuppertal, he has a collection of cars, and we always go to his house and kind of stay there and just go out. I always joke to people, it's really only about, it's an eating tour.
Right, eating and drinking.
Drinking tour, but we have to have something to do during the day, so we go look at the cars.
Yeah, that's what Europe is for, really. It's just about eating and drinking and walking and yeah, looking at old cars.
Exactly.
It's great. I love that. That's really, yeah. Really cool. What modern cars, if any, and don't feel obliged to answer the question if you don't have, an honest answer. Are there any modern cars on your radar that you even bat an eye at?
Now, by modern, do you mean earlier than like 1973, or
let's say
like a late model car, like in the last 5 years or so?
So I would say we can split that into a two part question. Let's do what type of car from 74 and up, 74 through 98. So we'll stay air cooled, and then which cars in the really modern era, and they can be Porsches or not Porsches. Do you have any sort of affinity for, respect for, or if not, no big deal?
You know, it's funny. I'm kind of, in that sense, I'm sort of binary, to use a popular current term. I remember when I met Jay Leno, he bought a car that I had restored back in the 70s, and yeah. I went up to his shop and helped him buy the car, went with him, and he gave me a tour around his building, and about halfway through he said, "So you're just into Porsches, right?" And I said, "Yeah, I understand, I appreciate other cars, but I said, I know that you have a very eclectic collection."
Yeah, extremely.
But I said, I'm kind of got stuck on Porsches, But I'll tell you, I have three early four cans, and I really like those cars. Those are really fun, but they're not a car for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
I can get my way around them mechanically and all that, so I don't have an issue with that. But they're not a car for just the casual person.
No.
But on the 74 through like 90, something like the later air cool cars.
Right.
I don't have a 73 RS, for example. And some people will say, "Why don't you have a 73 RS? I guess I never caught the bug or something."
Well, I think that car is great, and I've driven a few really good ones. But I think that's just a poster car for a lot of people, and for people
it
who haven't driven them,
iconic,
they just, they immediately say 73 RS, but
yeah,
there's a lot of other good cars out there besides that one.
Oh no. I mean, I know. I mean, that's kind of my, when I built my 71 hot rod, I mean, I am not bagging on Magnus, but when he started out, I thought, gosh, everybody's calling them the urban, modifying cars, and he's in all these magazines. I'm like, shit, we were doing that stuff like 20 years ago.
Sure, sure. You
I
just.
mean, we were all buying Carrera flares in 1975, and putting them on our cars, and making sport exhausts and, doing all this stuff to build hot rods way before the R group ever started.
Right.
That was kind of the cool thing. But as far as the later cars like that, I had a 98 turbo, a twin turbo, and I thought
Oh,
that was a
cool.
really fun car.
Cool.
A 993 twin turbo, and
Yeah, those are great.
that's kind of it on those cars. A lot of people don't agree with it, but I know a lot of people want to have a 964. They want to have a 993. They want to have a one of every kind of iteration of car, and I get it. But I mean, like a G model 930 turbo, if you get in that car and drive it around for a day, and then somebody gives you like a 993 turbo to drive, you're like,
Yeah, it's a big
holy
difference.
smokes, this is a lot better car.
Yeah, you like night and day. They're not really
And
even
the newer the
comparable.
cars get, the less difference there seems to be. I had an 18 GT3, and I put 5,000 miles on it, and it
Ooh,
was a fun
so many
car.
miles.
Yeah, I mean, not really a lot of miles. I
No, it was
mean,
Joe. Yeah, I was saying
some guys put
none at all.
200 miles on them,
Yeah.
and I drove it and had fun with it, but I sold it for more than I paid for it, and I decided to buy a new. So I ordered a new GTS.
Nice.
I felt like the GT3 was a little too. I'm probably dating myself, but I felt like it was a little too loud and a little too intense. I just,
They are
when I
definitely
get to a car like
they're
that, I
track
just want to.
oriented.
Yeah, I mean, it's a track car, and I wasn't driving it on the track. I've never really been into that, but it would be a great car on the track, and I guess I wanted something a little calmer, maybe. I
Sure.
don't know. That's why I ordered a GTS. So we'll see how I like it when I get
And
it.
that would be a 992 GTS.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sure you'll dig that car. It's gotten
I
good,
think
good
so, yeah.
reviews. And did you get that lightweight package in it where you can delete the rear
I
seats?
actually did, but they didn't have that when I ordered it. You only could get that with the bucket seats.
Oh,
And
screw
I
that.
asked them, I said, can I get that with the 18-way seats? And they said, no, we don't offer that.
Well, that's
Well,
annoying.
now they started to offer it, but they probably had tons of people ask, And so I did order that package, but I got it with the 18-way seats, not the
I love that.
buckets.
That's actually really a great move. I mean, that the 18-way seats, I'm only 23, almost 24, but I like the 18-way seats. I'm not trying to be a hero myself here. They're comfortable.
Nah, I'm 60, gonna be 69 in a month. So, it's a little harder getting out of the cars than it used to be. And the early cars, are bad enough. But yeah, I couldn't. I have a friend of mine has the buckets, the carbon buckets, and a GT3. And I mean, I got in that car. I got in fine, but it was getting out. It was like,
Sure.
help,
You need like a
I'm
rope or
stuck in the
something.
car. Yeah, right.
Well,
Right.
that's cool, man. I mean, GTS will be fun and they're fast now and
Oh
they're
yeah,
very
it's
tunable
plenty
too. That
fast.
engine's very tunable.
Yeah, I always joke with people, I need a chip to make the car slower, not faster.
That's so true. All right, well, I will let you go. This was a great conversation
Yeah,
and
man. I hope
it was
it
awesome.
helped you guys out. And I got to come out there and check out your place sometime.
Yeah, you really should. Eli would love that as well. And
Yeah.
we maybe should, think about doing an event together where we can bring some Wilhoit cars over here and have some members look at
Yeah, I'd
them.
love that'd be
Could be
great.
great.
And I hope we're having our open house this year, and the end of February, so I hope
Oh,
you guys
sweet.
can make it out here.
Yeah, that would be all. I would love to. Maybe we should plan on doing something in, March or April.
Yeah, that sounds good.
All right, cool, man. Awesome.
Yeah, let me know.
We'll let you know. All right. Well, have a good night.
Okay.
Have a good rest of your evening and happy Thanksgiving.
You too. Good talking to you.
All right. Bye, man.
Bye-bye.
That was John Wilhoit, an absolute Porsche legend in Southern California, and for that matter, in the United States, and what it sounds like on a global scale as well. He is really one of the living legends of the trade and the craft. He's definitely an artisan and makes some extremely beautiful cars that, if anyone ever has the opportunity to even look at one or sit in one, take that chance because they're beautiful and they're far and few between. We from Otto here wish you a happy Thanksgiving. Our club will be closed for a few days over the holiday, so we wish everyone a happy and healthy Thanksgiving. Hope you're spending it with your families, and it will be a very nice time for everyone. On another note, our Auto Works sales division is in full force and go. If you are interested in consigning a vehicle with us, please do not hesitate to reach out. Feel free to shoot me an email, sam@autocarclub.com. We can discuss your car in some detail and see what we can do with it. We've had some exceptional results. We work very closely with Bring a Trailer on listings, and we've really seen some great numbers on that platform. If private sales are more your thing, we can also sort that out too. Over and out from Otto. This is Sam, Thursday, November 18th. We hope everyone has a good weekend and Thanksgiving. Bye-bye.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Fuel for Thought. To listen to even more great stories from our special guests, make sure to subscribe to FFT on Apple Podcast and Spotify. My name is Sam Bierenbaum, and on the behalf of Auto Car Club and my co-host Eli Kogan, we wish you a great rest of your day. And don't forget, no matter where you are, take some time, grab your keys, and go for a drive.